you may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition, this portion of the Hagman and Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman. Well, I'm just one of the two Hagmans. My son is recovering from surgery, went real well. He'll be back on Monday. He might stop in tomorrow, as we have Coach Dave Dobmeier in the studio tomorrow to talk about a number of things, and especially what he's doing. Tell everyone you know about our show for tomorrow night. Catch Dave Dobmeier, and you can. You know him from past the Salt, PTSalt.com, Coach Dave Live. I mean, you talk about a guy that really puts some fire underneath you. He's the guy. Portion of this broadcast brought to you by Minuteman Stove. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to MinutemanStove.com. And one of the things, I cannot recommend this highly enough. I mean, this is one thing I think everyone should have in their prep area. This is an ammo can, reinforced ammo can, and it's decked out. It's a rocket stove the miracle of their engineering creates a very hot, sustained fire in this ammo can, in this rocket stove. And of course, they have built up burners and such, and a lid that comes down and seals it up. Plus, you get fire starters as well. And these fire starters are just absolutely incredibly effective. I mean, you can just one strike and it's, you've got a fire. And guys like me, not a Boy Scout, minus a lighter, this would be my next wish, you know, on my prep list. So they've got a great deal running right now at Minuteman Stove, folks. Go to Minuteman Stove. That's MinutemanStove.com. They've got a great deal on their featured products, Forever Wood half-inch fire starters. They've got the actual Minuteman rocket stove and the other fire starters as well. MinutemanStove.com. Thank you so much for being part of our extended family and family of sponsors. Now, this guy that's on right now with me, thank you so much for... I can't say enough good about him either. Josh Tully, he was on last night, and we just got inundated with so many emails from listeners last night and today saying, I listened to your program. It had to be one of the best programs ever, Doug, because of the message by Josh Tully. And Josh got a number of emails as well. And of course, he is the author. He's a nationally syndicated talk show host, and we have the link up for his book, Okay. All right. See? Let me try this on my own now. Evangelopreneur, right? No.
That's pretty close.
All right. Honest to goodness. You know, I actually, last night I got like a half a dozen emails saying, kidding with me, saying, you know, I can't believe you don't know how to, you spell it out phonetically. Folks, I'm looking at it phonetically. I'm looking at it phonetically, and it's not registering in my brain. So I'm going to blame the Sudafed, Mucinex, and, you know, whatever. But anyway, folks, that's a great book. And last night we talked about really working through what the New World Order, the people, the, well, you know, what they've got in store for us, living in the lawlessness and corruption. Josh has a radio show every Monday, well, Monday through Friday, from 10 to noon Eastern Time. If you go to joshtully.com, that's his website. There you can find out all sorts of things about Josh and watch his videos, listen to his radio broadcast live. I recommend that live, too. Josh, thanks for coming on board with me tonight. Really appreciate you.
Oh, it is great being back. And, you know, two nights in a row, I'm starting to feel like Josh Hagman. So we're up to three Hagmans now. but you're getting much better on saying the name of the book, Evangelpreneur, like evangelist. Just add a preneur on the end.
Yeah, yeah, I can do that when I grow up. You know, and I just, that's, and it's so embarrassing because, you know, of all the things to have a problem with, the name of a guest or co-host book, to mispronounce that or not to be able to pronounce it. I really think a lot of that's mental on my part. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I had this Iranian lawyer on the show. There was no way on earth I could pronounce his name right. And every commercial break when we come back and I would say his name, I would actually say it in a different way. So I wasn't even consistent in my error. It was just terrible. And you're right. As a host, you just kind of freak out a little bit when that happens.
Yeah. I was looking for, you know, I'm going to crawl underneath the desk. But being the good sport that you are, you know, I'm going to have to go order like five copies of your book just to make up for it. But, and I do, folks, I would urge everyone to get a copy of his book on Amazon. Go to joshtully.com and follow the links, or go to amazon.com and do a search for Josh Tully, and there you can check his work out, and not just check it out, but purchase it. Josh, a lot of stuff to get into. I know we're going to have a continuation from yesterday. Just before the you came on, we were talking, mentioned about the situation, the women, or the situation in Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah. You covered this today, right?
Yeah, I did. And as a matter of fact, you know, not only did I cover this, I had a guest on the show who was trying to apologize for Islam when this was going on. And there's this mindset that I find very prevalent in the freedom movement, the alternative media movement, whatever you want to call what it is that we do. And there's this mindset that the only reason that radical Islam exists is because of blowback. For some reason, they're doing this because we're bombing their country. Now, let me say right out of the gate, I think we should be mostly non-interventionalists. I think, yes, ISIS has its roots in America. The founder of ISIS came from a Western prison. We have funded them, trained them, and armed them. I am totally on board with this idea that drone strikes are not working. It just causes more problems. I totally get it. But on the other side of the coin, we also have to realize that radical Islam predates 9/11. Radical Islam predates America, for goodness sakes. The British, most people don't know this, the British were actually paying off Muslims in their trade routes with America. And then when the Americans became America, they too were paying off radical Islam. And that's how we actually got the Marine theme song and why we call the Marines the Leathernecks, because these guys actually had to fight radical Islam in 1776, for goodness sakes. And then before that, radical Islam existed through the expansion, and the response to that expansion was the Crusades. Everybody loves to say, oh, look at religion. Look how violent it is. Haven't you ever heard of the Crusades? Well, the Crusades was actually a response to radical Islam as it spread through Europe. And the route that they took was through Greece, Italy, and Spain. Well, deja vu, that's exactly what's happening today. And I was asking this lady, I said, look, the number one victim of radical Islam, to be honest, is other Muslims. So you're telling me they're killing themselves because we dropped bombs on them? I mean, we have to get to a level of maturity here where we say, yeah, we're not supposed to be doing what we're doing. But in reality, what has happened is the global elite just saw a fire that was already burning. Radical Islam was a fire that was already burning, and somebody thought to themselves, hey, I know what to do. Let's throw some gas on this thing, and that's what we're seeing. But we have to realize that when it comes to radical Islam, And this is what that attorney from Iran said on my show. He said, Josh, I'm going to tell you right now that the moderates are way more dangerous than the radicals, because the moderates are going to come in and they're going to take over cities, towns, and counties without firing a shot, and that's exactly what we're seeing happen. So whether it's in Minnesota or it's in Sweden, like last weekend when 40 women were raped and sexually assaulted, all 40 of them by refugees, or if it's like the terrible story out of Idaho with the young girl who was assaulted and molested and videotaped while she was doing it, once again by refugees, whatever it is, we have to get to this point and say, hey, you know what? Okay, we can argue about if it was a New World Order creation. We can argue about if Islam was started by the Catholic Church, which there's a lot of evidence to suggest it actually was. We can argue about all of those things, but at some point we have to deal with reality. I was in the high-risk security industry for a very long time, and if I happened upon a physical confrontation, the cause of that physical confrontation was absolutely important, but it's not something I thought about until I stopped the physical confrontation. Once we stop it and secure a property, a premise, or personhood, then we can look back and say, what caused this and how do I prevent it? But where we're standing right now, Doug, is we are fighting an enemy, and nobody wants to identify what the enemy is, nor do we want to actually get into the mind of the enemy. For example, how many people know what a conquering mosque is? A conquering mosque is when they come into a town, and they'll buy a church, and then they'll put a mosque inside of it. And we Americans just think, oh, well, isn't that sweet? I mean, the church was kind of going under anyway. They needed a building. Yep, that works. That's not what it means to them. When they do that, they have a term for it called a conquering mosque. In their methodology, their ideology, they just conquered you. Well, the same is true with terms like, well, we don't hurt the innocent. And we think, well, that means they don't want to hurt anybody who hasn't done anything to them. But that's not what innocent means in the Arabic when you take it out of the Quran. What innocent means are people who are already believers. Anybody who is not a believer is not innocent. So a two-year-old who hasn't done anything yet is not an innocent person in the mind of traditional Islam. Now, in America, we would consider that an innocent victim if it was caught in the crossfire of a hostage situation, but they don't. So we have to really just take a step back when we see things happening in Minnesota and say, you know what? I don't care if it's CIA. I don't care if it's false flag. I don't care if it's legit. There comes a point where a bullet is a bullet regardless of who fires it, and I need to get myself out of the path of the bullet.
You know, back in 2009, I appeared as a guest on WBEN Talk Radio AM 930 out of Buffalo, New York. In fact, I was a regular on the Tom Bowerly Show. And we, Tom Bowerly and I had uncovered a lot of, a lot of what you're talking about, this concentration, the conquering mosques at that time, because that was in the wake of the Lackawanna Six. I don't know how many people remember that, the group of Lackawanna terrorists, or terrorists in Lackawanna, New York. And so we had found, through digging and doing research, we had found that the imams, a couple of imams there, key people, were purchasing all sorts of real estate around the mosques, but also around churches. And ultimately, on April 18th, 2009, the Buffalo News reported that the famous, I mean, this great church, former Queen of Peace, sold for $300,000 to a Muslim group. Mm-hmm. This is a landmark building, okay? So we had exposed this, and the true reasons, as you were mentioning, for this conquering aspect, this conquering mosque. Well, I have to say that we had a problem, Tom Bowerly, the talk show host, and I, with certain individuals within the city and within the federal government. They told us to shut up. I mean, really, they said, look, you don't know what you're talking about, and please be quiet. This couldn't be further from the truth. But there was a celebration. I guess I said all that to say this. There was this public celebration where the church leaders Catholic and Protestant church leaders all celebrated this unity of purpose between the Muslims and the Catholic Church in this case. And it was anything but that. Some people are under that delusion. Thank you for mentioning that.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Yeah. But yeah, so we've been conquered. Through, they've used our democratic laws to conquer us, or democratic laws to invade us, and religious laws to conquer us, essentially, as referenced by that famous Archbishop quote. But yeah, I mean, it's so circling back around here, we've got this presence now of these renegade groups, shall we say? I don't know, of Muslims all across the United States. I mean, in this case, mm-hmm. Minneapolis.
Well, not only that, you also have the presence of Sharia in courts. A lot of people think, okay, well, we're going to fight Sharia and it's never going to happen in America. But what most Americans need to realize is Sharia has already played a role in over 120 court cases in the United States. Over 120 times the courts have relied on Sharia over and above our system of laws. And I am the first person to point out that our system of laws is not perfect. But holy Hannah, we still live in this idea that, oh, at some day this might happen and they're going to try to implement Sharia and we're going to stop it. The reality is it's already here. You already have banks in Chicago issuing Sharia laws. You already have a judge in the whatever circuit court system New York is in. She swore her in to her new office wearing the burqa and putting her hand on a Quran, pledging that the Quran trumps the Constitution. Well, how can you defend and uphold the Constitution if you are saying that, nah, I'm going to use my own set of laws instead? So we have to at least get to this point. It kind of ties into what we were talking about yesterday, Doug. We have to get to this point where we at least realize where we are. Because once we realize where we are, then we can talk about what are we going to do about it.
Well, exactly. I mean, we have to confront the issues, and I think I think you've done a great job. We've done a great job in doing so, and just to remind people that when remember back in 01 and really the first decade of the 21st century, the war on terror. Well, terror is not a target; it's a tactic, and people have to understand that. And Islam is the problem here when we talk about terrorism. So, yeah, I mean, but so what do we do? I mean, how do we turn this around? By the way, you had uncovered this, 120 cases decided by Sharia?
Well, I didn't uncover it. Matter of fact, there's an organization called Act for America that has chapters all across the country, and they uncovered it. They found it, they published it, they put it out there, and they also found tons of errors in textbooks. And they're fixing that, too. But they're responsible for finding it. I had their founder, Brigitte Gabrielle, on the show.
Oh, yeah. Know her well. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And she was on the show talking about that. And most people just find that mind-boggling that this is actually happening. And, you know, there's nobody holy but the Lord. We're all, you know, with sin. I totally get that. But you have to at least admit that there's an opposing ideology when it comes to these two political systems. Islam is as much a political system as it is a religious system. So even if you're a devout atheist saying, oh, well, you know, religion doesn't mean anything, completely irrelevant to the conversation. Because along with the religion comes a political system, and that political system is gaining massive weight really quickly. And it was only a few short years ago that we had our first Muslim politician sent to D.C., now there's a few of them, and that's growing. And, you know, you have to at least at one point say, hey, wait a second, their movement is growing, we don't have a movement, so even though they're the minority right now, we don't have anything. So we have to get to that point, which is why I'm excited to be here again today and talking about what we do and how do we do that. And, of course, you know, a lot of people mentioned, Josh, you were going to talk about what happens if there were to be a civil war. So before I go, you have to remind me to say there. We can start there if you want.
Well, you know what? you're doing such a wonderful job articulating what I am unable to. You're doing such a wonderful job talking about the issues at hand. Any other news items? I'll ask you this first, I suppose. Any other news items? You had watched, as I did earlier today, this, I don't even know how to describe it, these hearings with Comey, or meetings with Comey.
What was that? That was a joke, is what that's called. That's called a joke without a punchline. If people haven't been paying attention, the situation with Director Comey came to a head today. There was a hearing. It was exactly what you would expect. The Republicans were going after him. The Democrats were trying to defend him. And you know what? It's really a kick in the teeth to the Democrat voter out there. Now, I am not a member of either party. I think it's one coin, two sides. But if I were a Democrat, I would feel betrayed today, because there is no denying that Hillary Clinton broke the law. She did it. She admits she did it. He admits she did it. Everybody on the planet admits that Hillary Clinton broke the law. Now what they're trying to do is to convince all of us that it doesn't matter. And if you are a self-respecting Democrat out there who holds to the principles of labor and middle-class America and equality and fairness, then you have to be livid right now as to what you saw your party representatives do. They were basically saying, anything Hillary wants to do is okay, but if anybody else does it, throw them in the clink. Send them up the river. So what we saw today was there was a couple good one-liners, couple shots. Gowdy had a couple good ones where, you know, they were basically saying, hey, one of you lied. Either you lied to us under oath, Director, or she did, so you better figure out which one lied. Now, there's a slight possibility that this isn't entirely over if the people who are in this panel have any sort of guts at all. They can go after her for lying to Congress. But as we've seen before, that's happened before, and nothing really happens. So it's just an extension of what we saw yesterday.
You're exactly right. Now, my takeaway from this, the only thing that I saw any interest, well, anything to be interesting about today, was Comey's denial, or Comey's no comment, about whether the Clinton Foundation was a target of the investigation. Because I do believe, I sincerely believe, based on my research, independent of anyone else and anything else, just the compilation of the facts, that the foundation is engaged in just a lot of outsourcing. Well, I suppose you could almost make the case, and I don't have any evidence of this, but I will say that there's a lot of foreign donors, and I have to wonder if there isn't some quid pro quo for the money and information and such. So there's got to be, to me, there's got to be something there with respect to the Clinton Foundation. That his denial or his no comment, I'm not gonna comment on that. To me, spoke volumes. But then again, so what if he's not gonna do anything about the, obviously, yeah. So
she committed perjury. Use this as a way to maybe slow her down in the election. And that's what you have to realize, too. Are the Republicans actually doing anything, or are they just trying to slow her down so their team wins? Keeping in mind, again, that it's the same coin, just two sides of it. So it was a dog and pony show. Yeah, there were some good one-liners, and, you know, we'll see what comes of it, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, I understand that. Many people are suffering right now from headline fatigue, news fatigue, election fatigue. I was talking with somebody who came by my home today, actually making a delivery, and I knew this man from high school. I haven't seen him for a long time. People are shutting down. I guess when I was talking with him, I don't want to say he was clueless. He was careless. He could care less about the Clinton emails. He could care less about what was going on around them, basically. And it was a complete 180 from the man I knew back in high school, or the young man I knew back in high school. And I'm seeing this this fatigue by the population, majority of the population. So rather than, you know, continue to add on to this fatigue, I guess we have to admit, or recognize we're operating behind enemy lines as Christians, but that doesn't mean we shut down. We can actually not just survive, but even perhaps thrive behind enemy lines, and we have to settle for battle and have an operational plan. We have to have a plan and work our plan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and that's your specialty. That's your specialty. And folks, if people pay a ton of money to hear this man, I don't want to misrepresent things, but I mean, this is what your specialty is. In hard times, you know, you guide people and say, okay, this is what you need to do, basically. So what do we do? Knowing
well,
all
first,
this.
First, we have to realize that all hope is never lost. Anytime you're this side of the sod, we're in good shape. You also have to realize that if you're a believer, we read the end of the book and we win, so we know how it all ends. But more importantly, we have to realize that this is not an odd thing to create a thriving environment behind enemy lines. For goodness sakes, think about this for a second. The mafia is very good at it, and I'm not suggesting we do something illegal. I'm just saying that they create an entire culture and community and system outside the system. The Muslims that we referenced, extremely good at it. You have to give credit where credit is due. They come in with a purpose, they fulfill that purpose, and they create an environment. We see the same thing with groups in other nations. And this is why it all starts with free enterprise. If you look at any system, communism, socialism, fascism, any ism you want to choose, free enterprise is always your best option as a person and as a family and as a tribe. What we have a tendency to do is we have a tendency to judge political systems and say, well, this one's good for the people, or that one's bad for the people. Well, we have to get to the point first where we say, what works for you? And I know that sounds selfish, but it works this way, and this is really true. If you think about it, when you get on an airplane, they tell you that before you help somebody next to you with an oxygen mask, should they deploy, the first thing you have to do is secure yours. Because if you're not secure, you are no help to those around you. It doesn't mean you're greedy. It means you love those people enough to make sure you're still in the fight. Well, that's what entrepreneurship allows us to do. It allows us to become entrepreneurs. And people always say, well, yeah, but Josh, there's all this red tape. Well, yeah, but Josh, there's all this regulation. Well, let me ask you a question. That just kind of proves the point. Why do you think they're trying to regulate it? Notice how they don't regulate where you can work. Notice how they don't regulate how many hours you can put in at the job. What they regulate is if you can start your own business. Well, that should tell you right off the bat that there's power there. That's why they don't want you having it. So that's where you should go. Secondly, most red tape is not as big as people think it is. Now, if you're going to start an insurance agency or a pharmaceutical company, yes, you are going to be up to your eyeballs in red tape. But if you're going to start a simple mom and pop business, your red tape might be $75. So as much as it's we hate it and it's stupid and, you know, they're just trying to milk you for money, yep, it's true. But operate as if you're operating behind enemy lines. There were entrepreneurs in the Hebrew population in Egypt when they were slaves. It can be done. Matter of fact, if you know anybody who's been to prison or you've been there yourself, you know that there's a guy in there that can get you anything. Which means that even in a cage, in a literal cage, entrepreneurship still works. So step number one, that's where we got to go. Step number two, we have to start saying to ourselves, well, am I so focused on national politics that I'm totally forgetting to support my local constitutional sheriff? And this is vitally important because most people don't realize that there's a war against sheriffs. I know where I am right now. I'm in St. Louis County, Missouri. They have gotten rid of the sheriff's department. The county north to me has also gotten rid of the sheriff's department. I know in Delaware, many of the counties have gotten rid of the sheriff's department, and instead they have gone to county police departments. And if you don't know any better, you might think, well, what's the big deal? A cop is a cop. A badge is a badge, right? No! A sheriff has constitutional authority over that of the federal government. So people always ask me, well, Josh, how do we take this country back? It's not in D.C. I mean, just think about the logic, right? This is like Art of War 101. Why would we fight the enemy on the battlefield that the enemy designed? That's stupid strategy 101. But instead, if we take out a map, there's about 3,600 counties and some change in this country. If we said to ourselves, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go county by county and start taking back counties from a constitutional-based, liberty-loving, freedom sort of perspective. Once we get to 1,500 counties, it doesn't matter what D.C. does. D.C. is neutered. There's no more power in D.C. And that's a fight that we can actually win, which is why right now they're trying to get rid of county governments while we're not watching. They're trying to get us to focus so much on D.C., and like a magic trick, watch what I'm doing over here so you don't see what I'm doing over there. And I would bet you dollars to donuts that if people went to work tomorrow, asked who's running for president, whoever they asked would know, and then ask who's running for county board and county sheriff, and they're going to get a deer in the headlight look. Well, that's a problem. And that's a problem we can fix. It doesn't take the destruction of the New World Order to do it. And it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, where we can get involved in real practical ways, and those are just two. The next thing you have to do, and maybe it's first, but one of the things you have to do is you have to get together with your family or yourself if you're single and say, what am I actually trying to accomplish with life anyway? What am I trying to do? What's important to me? I have a couple friends who totally gave up their jobs altogether. They make odds and ends money when they can. And for their life, they travel the world. And on their Facebook, it is literally today, hey, we're on our way to Norway. Tomorrow, it's hey, we're on our way to Thailand. And that's the life they wanted. So you have to say to yourself, what would we do? And a great example of that, Doug, and I'm sure you get this, as a single guy, at the moment anyway, as a single guy, I once in a while will watch a baseball game. And people will go after me, Josh, don't you know there's a New World Order we gotta fight? This is what's wrong. People are falling for entertainment. This is just terrible. Well, what would you have? I mean, let's just paint the perfect picture. There is no New World Order. We could have whatever society we want. What would you have? Well, we would have art, and we would have sports, and we would have culture. Well, then doesn't it make sense to enjoy some of those things now so you realize and experience what you're fighting? Because nothing demoralizes troops faster than not having a cause to fight for. And if you don't believe me, go look at the suicide rate of soldiers today. And this is exactly why we have to find balance, too. So step number four is find balance. Where's the balance in your life? You cannot be so sucked into rooting out conspiracies and bad guys that you have totally neglected your health, or you've totally neglected, you know, anything else that should be important to you. What good are you going to be to fight the fight, if it actually does get to that, if you haven't walked around the block in 6.5 years? And It's kind of like the people who, well, I got guns and I got ammo. Okay, have you studied business? Well, no. Well, then basically you're just going to be the store for the rest of us. I hope your Kevlar works. Because yeah. even business skills is a prepper skill. But we get so pigeonholed, guns, food, water. We forget like the 39 other things that you need to know if you're really going to be a real prepper. So it you have to take a step back and look at that entire scenario. And then I guess the fifth thing is we have to realize that the battlefield never contains just two parties. It is never just friend and foe. There are always other things in the battlefield. One of the things in our battlefield in this day and age is the ignorant and the naive. They're almost an adversary in and of themselves. The other thing that's in our battlefield is just the system in which we're in when it comes to fiat currencies and all that other sort of stuff. And yes, I understand that there's a fiat currency. Yes, I understand there's fractionary lending. And yes, I talk about how evil it is in my book. As a matter of fact, I even gave a speech in a bank in the belly of the beast, and I was telling everybody about how the fiat system works. So you don't have to lecture me on that. But here's the point. Anything that is used as a weapon against you can be taken away and used as a weapon for you. So even though fractionary lending and fiat currency is evil on a stick, it is still a weapon that they're using against us, which means we can use it if we figure out how to, and use it as a weapon for our cause as long as it exists, until we get to the point where we can get it to cease to exist.
You know, as I listen to you go through that checklist and run down that narrative, we need to, in my view anyway, address the situations, but understand we have to work within the situations. But what I get a lot of times, and I kind of want to connect this to this statement here, is I will have people either by telephone, sometimes some of our callers, emailers, will say, wait a minute, I'm a Christian. We are not to be of the world, so we should have nothing to do with the fiat monetary system, okay? And I was trying to think of a better way to introduce that, because to me that's I understand where their heart is, I suppose, but I don't. I mean, it's an impossible task in my view, right?
Well, it is, and that's why Jesus even has the fish give up Roman money, and I get that a lot. You know, oh, Josh, money's not important, and then I say, so how long have you been unemployed? No, I have a job. Well, then money is important at least some level, because you're making money. So
right.
We have to get real about that, too. We really do. We have to stop lying to ourselves when it comes to money, too. Let me give you an example. We have this tendency to think that greed is an exorbitant amount of money. That's just kind of what we've grown up thinking. Oh, well, greed is the rich guy with the cigar and the limousine and the monocle in his eye or something. But that's not necessarily greed. What greed is putting something, in this case money, above the things that are supposed to be more important. So, let's just say Bob says that his city is important, he loves his church community, he loves his neighbors, his family lives down the street, all that sort of stuff. But Bob moves away, two states away, three states away, for $4 more an hour. Well, like it or not, Bob is greedy. Now, wait. I know people are going to say, well, he's doing that to feed his family. He's doing that because he needs to. Josh, he's not making enough. Totally get it? Understand? Way to go, Bob. But we have to realize that what Bob did was put money above the things that he said were more important than money. Did he not? And this is why some of this stuff hurts a little bit. Because we see that all the time. People tell me all the time, money's not important. Money's not important. And then I say, okay, well, let's meet at Tuesday at 2. Well, I can't. I got to go make money. Oh, I thought you said money wasn't important. Well, without it, I can't eat. Well, that sounds pretty important. Without it, I can't stay in my apartment. Well, that sounds pretty important.
Well, Josh, we can just trust in God. God will provide.
God will provide. He absolutely will provide. And I used this example yesterday because I love it. God will provide for us the same way he provides for the sparrow. The sparrow still has to get up, Doug, leave the nest, and go get it. We are living in a Christian world today where we think we can just sit at home, tweet and Facebook, and watch Maury Povich and think that somehow the money's just going to show up under the door or something. And it doesn't work that way. We have to get up and go get it. Now, let me also clarify, I am not putting anybody down. I think single mothers who are working two jobs to keep their kids fed are heroes. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, overall, as a people group, we have been lied to on how to make money. We've been lied to. Let's take the Bible, for example. The Bible gives us four types of people: masters, servants, laborers, and slaves. Masters, pretty easy. That's the big rich guy. Slaves, pretty easy. That's a slave. Which leaves us the two people in the middle. Let's take a look at the life of a servant. Now, this is a situation where God says you shall not be a servant to God and mammon or money. You shouldn't do this. Ready? A servant shows up for his duties when the boss tells him to. Oh, wait a second. What time do you get to work? Do you get to decide? The servant goes home at the end of the night based on when his boss allows him to. Oh, wait a second. Now we're two for two. The servant, if he finishes his task, let's say it's painting the house, and he gets it done by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, does he get to go home? Nope. If there's time to lean, there's time to clean. How about you take this opportunity and you fill out those TPS reports? The servant, if he saves up enough money, he can buy his freedom. Today we call that retirement. The servant, if he loves his master enough, he can go to the city gate, have an awl put through his ear, have his servant's signet put in there, and he'll be his servant, or he'll be his master's for life. Well, today we call that tenure and pension. Folks, in a very real way, we are a servant to money when we are selling our time at an hourly rate for money. We just are, and we have to realize that. Now, let's look at a laborer. A laborer is what Jesus actually recommends you are. He uses it multiple times in parables, and in one of the parables he uses it, he uses the example of the laborers work in the field, and then other laborers show up, and the first laborers get a little upset because the second laborers are getting paid the same rate, right? Remember that parable? And it's a great spiritual parable. It's talking about, you know, he who comes into the kingdom of heaven, even at the latest moment, is still equal to get the same amount as the guy who gets there first. But it's interesting how he uses laborers to do it. So a laborer evidently gets to set his own rate. Well, today we call that a small business owner. A laborer can work today and take tomorrow off. Huh. A laborer can expand his skill set, so today I might be working your field, but tomorrow I might be mending fishing nets, which means I have the ability to work today in Chicago and tomorrow in Tampa. Whereas if I'm employed, I dream of going someplace else and think maybe someday if I earn my freedom I can get out of here. And the worst of all is we teach our kids to do the same thing. We teach them, kids, money's not important. Oh, but by the way, make sure you get a good education. Why, mom and dad? So they can sit around and philosophize all day? Oh, no. So you can get good money. Oh, gotcha. And I remember I asked a group of Christian dads once. I said, okay, Christian dads, if your daughter comes home with Tattoo Timmy and says, oh, I am in love, I'm going to marry this man, what is the first question you ask him? How are you going to take my daughter? What's the second question you ask him? How much is the wedding going to cost? What's the third question you ask him?
Where do you want to be buried?
Right? I mean, In reality, we look at these questions, and they're all based on money from a group of Christian dads who just told me money wasn't that important. So why don't we at least grow up about this stuff and says, hey, let's do this. So, you know, we have to at least get to this point where we acknowledge that God is telling us don't be a servant to money, and most of us, there's exceptions, but I'm talking to a broad audience, most of us are really servants to money. We know it, we feel it, we just don't want to admit it because then we have to admit what that means.
How about those people who say, well, you know, that's nice, Josh, but here I am, I'm 58, 59 years old, I'm what, a half a dozen years away from retirement, they're collecting a pension, none of this applies to me. I mean, I've been married 30 years, I've got a nice nest egg put away, none of this that you're talking about, where does it apply to me? What would you say to somebody like that? Because I've heard you talk about this. No, I've folks, don't think you can pull one over on Josh Tully. I've heard him talk about this. I love your answers. Go ahead, sir.
Well, here's the reality. The reality is that inflation has been a practical level of 10% every year since 1871. So when we look at where we are and we are in retirement, this is why we have so many people who are retired who are underwater. This is why there are so many reverse mortgages. This is why there's so many old people working at Walmart. Because the reality is that your pension, regardless of how cool it is the day you retire, is never, ever, ever going to keep up with inflation. It's also never, ever, ever going to keep up with taxes. So your retirement, your pension that you think is really good right now, is not going to be good in 10 years. Matter of fact, it's going to be about half of what it is today. And if you don't believe me, I put an example in Evangelpreneur of a cop that used to live around the corner, and it's the used to that's going to be the key here. He was a cop in the 60s. He retired by the time I was born, right? Here's a guy who had a great government job with a great government pension, and he was putting away his 10% like they were telling him. And out of his $75 a week, which was awesome back then, he was putting away his $7.50 into retirement, and they were telling him there is no way, shape, or form that your $15,000 or $15,600 house is ever going to be too expensive for you. He had the house paid off by the time Nixon left office. Well, guess what? He now had to move into an assisted living facility because his pension couldn't keep up with inflation. His tax payment now on the house was more than the house. See, part of the problem, Doug, is we have a tendency to look at our economic condition as in relation to where we are right now. Well, we can't do that. What we have to do is say, okay, what was the price of bread 30 years ago? Oh, 5 cents. Gotcha. What's the price of bread now? $2.20? Does that sound like 3% inflation to you? No, matter of fact, if it was 3% inflation, it'd still be under a buck. So let's just extrapolate that out. Do we really expect that to change and go the other way? No. So what is that price of bread going to be 30 years from now? So if you're saving for your pension based on what you earn today, you are admitting, if you have eaten bread, that you are not going to have enough money in retirement, which is why I love seeing the 70 and 80-year-olds in my classes and seminars. I had a 75-year-old guy in a class, and him and his wife, actually, and they were fired up, man. They were fired up because finally he said, I feel like I got my life back. And they started a business, and they are so stinking fired up. They send me pictures of their office as they're growing. And he says, man, you totally gave me my youth back. And he was just going to ride off into the sunset and hope that he died before his pension did. Isn't that sick and twisted that we live in a country where we hope we die before the pension does? And that is a real thing. If you are saving for retirement and you're talking to your financial advisor, they're basically saying, are you going to die before we run out of money? How sick and twisted is that, as opposed to turning to the God who you said would provide, getting into a business and hoping and praying and doing the right things so he can actually bless it? That's what I'm saying.
And there it is. You're exactly right. And when I look at, a former neighbor, again, not far from retirement himself, excuse me. He had taken a job that was 90 miles away from his home. He had to be there at 7 in the morning. He worked until 5 at night or 4:30, whatever it was. So what happened was instead of commuting, he got an apartment in this town 90 miles away, city 90 miles away. Everything that he had worked for, I guess this is a long way of saying this, everything that he had worked for and talked to me about all of his dreams, retirement dreams, and how much he loved his wife and family, he lost everything because he sacrificed everything by putting that job first. And I'm not sure if it's applicable to what you were saying here. I guess in the larger sense it is, but in the context of money, making money, which is different than creating and maintaining wealth, I assert, people are crushing their families. I mean, we're our own worst enemy at times. Your thoughts? I mean, people have been so brainwashed. I guess when I read books like the Tavistock Institute, and I look back to World War II, and think about how the woman was taken from the home in a nuclear family, made to work or made to feel patriotic to work in the assembly lines, factories during World War II, have to help the war effort. That never flipped back to the woman staying home and the husband working, only the husband working, or doing whatever the husband would do, have a business or whatever. And businesses back in the late 40s or early 50s were a lot more than there are today. So I said all of that just to say you can read books. We have read books about the Tavistock Institute. We've cited Tavistockian language. We're slaves to our own mental box that we put ourselves in, I think, in many cases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's not just money. We put ourselves in that box when it comes to everything. I remember I was a guest on the show over the Father's Day weekend, and we had a similar conversation about fathers. You know, what do we do to get men to be men again in this world that's lacking manhood? Where have all the men gone? So you're absolutely right. The box that we've put ourselves in is a box that doesn't allow us to grow in any area of our life, and money is just one of those areas. It just happens to be the area that affects children, women, white people, black people, felons, college graduates. Like, that's the one that affects everybody. And it's one that people worry so much about. I mean, the number one cause for suicide is financial stress. So we can't pretend this isn't important. And right. I think this is why so many churches love having me in to talk about this. And if you are a pastor out there, just go to joshtully.com. You can figure out how to get me booked in your church. But because we're realizing this literally is a matter of life and death. For far too long in the Christian world, it has been either A, poverty gospel, or B, prosperity gospel, and neither one of those gospels is the true gospel. We need to get back to what does the Bible actually say and do it. And I tell people this all the time. No church should have the audacity to ask for money if they're not also going to biblically teach you how to make that money. You have these pastors talking about, you know, this is what you do in marriage, and this is what you do with your kids, and this is what you do with politics, and this is what you do with gardens, and, you know, there's conferences about homeschooling, there's conferences about, you know, how to make your own dresses or whatever, all these things churches do. Well, where is the conference on how to biblically make money?
Right.
Well, and if you're not going to teach me, then how dare you take it? That's my take anyway.
There you go.
Yeah,
and that's why it's to me it's so important when we talk about this. I've gotten emails where people say you talk about the problem but never the solution. You offer your slant on the news, analysis on the news, but what about what do we do? So this is why we have people like yourself on who are experts in this, and now we can see. This is great. To me, everyone should be listening to this. And by the way, you mentioned churches. This broadcast is being played to a men's group here in our town. And I'm not sure if I could say the name of the church. First Assembly. Anyway, so I want to say hello to them. And folks, if you're listening to this, regardless of what part of the country you're in, book Josh Tully at your church for a conference speaking, because this really strikes at the heart of the issue. Here we are. So, Josh, go ahead, because we only have about 2 minutes to the top of the hour.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and this ties directly into marriage, too, and I'll get to that, you know, once we get back. But when we have men's groups, when we have marriage classes, yeah, a lot of this has been built around the lack in our lives as opposed to what are we going to do to expand the kingdom. And if you really think about it, that's what it is. Oh, men, we are lacking fellowship. Let's create a men's group. We're lacking camaraderie. Let's create a men's group. And that's good. That's fine. You know, that's why people join other things like biker clubs and all that sort of stuff. Totally get it. But we have to then get to then how do we then expand this kingdom? I think every church should have a map, and they should have a war room and say, hey, what part of this city are we taking over next?
I love it. Let's saddle for battle. Let's create the war rooms inside our churches. Hey, I know some religions of peace are doing that, right? Except with a different motive and intent. Josh Tully is our co-host guest. We're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.